Back again.
$120 later, and my computer is booting up at least.
Yeah, it's hopefully that was the ticket.
Yeah, I replaced the battery with a official Mac battery, and it's at least booting up with the battery inside of it, but it's not recognizing the fact that there's a battery in there to charge it. So, you know, stuff.
Baby steps.
Hmm. So we are drinking, for the pre-show, we're drinking Crisp, which we had 2 days ago, because this is a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. 2 days ago, out of...
The Crisp.
The Crisp. We're drinking it out of the stout glass. The stout glass.
Right, so it should taste horrible, right?
Exactly. This is the Spielglaus stout glass. These are left-hand branded.
Yep. The light's green again.
Yeah, I'll give it some time, but it still says black. It still says no battery.
That's a bummer. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else, but... Yeah, just give it some time. Is the battery charged, or is the battery fully drained, or...?
The battery is neither fully drained nor fully charged.
It's almost like it's ignoring it completely, huh?
Mm-hmm. Sort of.
Oh, right. Not completely. It didn't turn off when he pulled the power there.
But it will turn off if I put it off for, if I leave it for, off for long enough.
Mm-hmm. You mean like a minute or?
Like 30 seconds.
Okay.
Not even.
Huh. That's unusual. Your light didn't come back on either.
I know. I'm aware. Yeah, so who knows?
The damn Chinese battery fried the charging circuit or something.
It's possible. It's possible.
So, what's new? I watched the information random entropy thing.
What'd you think?
I think it was good. He did make a point towards the end where there's a place between no information, you know, completely ordered and random, where we find value, right? Or we find, or it's interpretable. It's interpretable, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that was an interesting point. That I guess it gets more into psychology at that point, right? And they were just trying to like expose the whole idea. But I mean, that's the more interesting thing. And there was a bit of an error. You know, he had up that random set of ones and zeros, right? He's like, this can't be compressed, right?
Right. I thought that maybe there was a way to see it.
There's a series of four zeros there, right? So, you know, you could have made a custom algorithm that condensed four zeros.
But the question is, would making that algorithm have created more information than just... I mean, like...
Yeah, you're probably right. I guess you would have to take the algorithm. I was thinking more of a case where, you know, it's BZIP, right? It's on all the computers, right? So you just... But no, you have to transmit the algorithm too. So, okay. Yeah, because it's... And it was... Yeah. I mean, it was only minutely compressible. But it was a good video. And...
And yeah, so watch it.
And yeah.
Then
I watched the second one. I watched the one where we'll sitting in an anechoic chamber make you go crazy or not.
Yeah. And no, it won't. Or at least one that make him go crazy.
Right. However, I think if you tried to stand up in the dark, I think you'd find balance a little more difficult.
Why?
Not balance.
What, blind people can't balance?
No, it's not the blind thing. It's the, you're using your limited amount of sonar to kind of tell where things are, and when all the sounds that you make are not being bounced back to you.
But you're,
you get disoriented.
You get your balance from fluid inside your ear for the most part. That's related to sound.
No. Well, sure. I don't think that's all of it, right?
That may not be all of it, but that's a considerably large part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if you wore, you know, that would imply that deaf people can't. Or if you had something really loud music on, then you couldn't stand up and balance. That doesn't sound right.
Right. Okay. Fine. You win. I relent.
Now, the thing, the coolest thing, though, was the balloon popping. That I thought was great. Balloon
popping. Did I miss that?
Did you? He popped a balloon in a normal room, and then popped a balloon in the sound dampening room. It may have been on a different video.
It was either a different video, or it was when I was like, you know, I was listening to it while I was working, and I was kind of half watching. It was more than half watching it. That's why I had to stop watching Veritasium, because I wasn't being able to concentrate enough. But, you know, I did flip away from the screen a couple times. I don't think I missed that. I mean, you could definitely see when he was clapping and they closed the door. Mm-hmm. You could hear how each clap, the reverb was different. Each sound was distinctly different, right? And you don't realize when you hear a clap how much of what you're listening to is the reverb.
Yeah. But no, it was somebody who popped a balloon in one of those sound dampening rooms and just like, it was like nothing. Mm-hmm. So, because that's, you know, that again, that's a shockwave essentially that you're hearing.
Right.
And that only gets to your ears once and just dampen out. And it does not make the same impact.
Right. And you're only getting the ones that came directly at you.
Right. You don't get any other energy that's bouncing back. So, yeah. It's interesting. Very interesting. But what if you're out that would imply that if you were out, I guess you have the ground then. I was thinking if you're out in a field that's empty and you popped a balloon, it would be somewhat similar because the sound would radiate all around you.
It probably would. I mean, you do have the ground. You have, I mean, there's so much more noise, right? I mean, there's, even if the wind's not blowing, there's still wind, right? The air's still moving.
Right.
There's going to be animals.
But wouldn't that dampen the sound that you'd get from the balloon? I don't know. Maybe there's some vibration off of other air that comes back to you, that because this room is enclosed and it's...
Well, it's actually sucking the sound out of the room, basically. It's trapping it in the foil, right? So, there still might be some degree of sound bouncing off of air, but the room's relatively small compared to an open field, right? So you might get more back. That's a good point. That's kind of what I was trying to put. That's what I was thinking about when you said, right? I was trying to figure out how that would actually work and how it would be different from a room. But I think the room actively dampening the sound is probably the big thing as opposed to an open area. Because it's not like it's just going on. It's actually capturing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this still says no battery.
Sucky.
So I'll bring it into the Mac store and they're going to tell me, the recharging bit on your motherboard is broken. mm-hmm. Give me $300. And then at that point, what should I do? At that point, do I return the battery to Apple and just get a Chromebook? Or do I go through with the motherboard replacement?
I can't see going through the motherboard replacement. I'd be surprised. Is it only $300? Did they say that?
I don't know. I mean, I imagine it's got to be at least that, right? I mean, this is an old MacBook. This is not a new one.
Yeah, but the prices aren't going to drop off that quickly, right? They have to maintain them in stock. There's still a bunch of labor to replace it. When we've had to have motherboards replaced on in-warranty laptops with liquid damage where we've had to pay for it, the bill is around $1,000.
There's no way I'm paying $1,000 to replace the motherboard on this.
You think? So I can't imagine you're going to get a discount motherboard, at least not from Apple, and not have it installed. Maybe they have some tricks to get the battery to start working. I don't know how much time they're going to spend with this laptop since it's out of warranty, but you can try. Make a Genius Bar appointment. And,
yeah, I mean, they'll look at it either way, right? I mean, they'll at least take a look at it.
Yeah.
But, if they're going to charge me to do a diagnostic, then at that point...
I don't think they will. I think you'll be able to... You can show them the symptoms. They'll do the two things you just did. Maybe there'll be a third thing they can do, right? Mm-hmm. They do have diagnostic programs. Maybe they can actually look into... Actually, do that. Go to the click on the apple and do get info.
About this Mac.
Yeah, and then get info.
More info.
Then go to power or whatever the next button is for hardware or whatever.
Displays, storage.
No.
Memory.
Let me see where you're at here.
Overview. System report?
Yeah, system report. Power. And it should have stuff on battery, power, battery health, things like that. What do we got going on there?
It has like battery information saying charge remaining zero.
So that's messed up, right? Because it should say... it's not getting any of the information from the battery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's saying no batteries available. I mean, it's really...
Yeah, have them run diagnostics on it, see if they can figure out. Might be a software thing still. Possible.
Possible. Possible.
I mean, the next guess is that the charging circuit got horked up, either from age or from, Chinese battery misbehaving.
Mm-hmm.
So. Black market Chinese battery, I should say.
It's a white market. I mean, it was on Amazon. It's the one that has the most... It's not black market. Okay, it's just...
Right. Just not certified.
Yeah.
The kind of charger that, killed that Chinese lady.
Let's be fair. These are all Chinese batteries.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's why I correct. That's why I corrected my... But some cost 30 cents to make and some cost $20 to make. And the one you own now costs $20 to make.
Are you certain about that? I don't think that's true.
You paid like $120 for it.
I paid $120 for it. I paid $60 for the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess, based on what I know about Apple and everything they do, that the costs are as close to the same as you could conceivably get, $1 or $2 difference probably.
Maybe. I don't know with battery technology whether I'd think the same as I would for... And if you look at the chargers, right? Take apart a generic charger versus an Apple charger. There's a lot better engineering in the Apple charger.
Okay, if you say so.
I've seen reports where they've looked at the different components used in the cheap ones. I'm not talking about like Belkin ones. I'm talking about generic-ish ones. And
I didn't get the cheapest generic. Yeah, I got the most expensive generic, right. And the one that got the most stars. It wasn't like I went for just plain old cheap.
Right. I'm not blaming you.
Sounds like you're being accusatory.
I'm not being accusatory. I'm just talking about how, if anything, I'm accusing you for, I don't know.
Yes?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, anyway, so it's working. The computer part's working. It's just I have to make sure it's always plugged in, which is not terrible.
Right.
I mean, I could live with that. But the question is, do I live with that at $120? Or do I return that, get my $120 back, and buy a Chromebook?
Right.
That's the question.
You get the battery life, almost the battery life that you had with your Air.
Yeah.
Right. You don't... Oh, what about playing local video files and stuff like that?
I have no idea. You tell me.
Well, that's the one thing you were concerned about last time.
Yes.
So I always wonder if you thought about... if you had looked into that or not.
I hadn't. I didn't. I saw my computer was working partially, so I thought, all right, well, let's go through this one before I start thinking about buying a Chromebook. There's no point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But this needs to go to... Apple Store.
Maybe that corner is dented. That's why it's not working.
It's always like
that. The corner's been dented for years and years. All right. Well, that's enough talking about the damn computer.
Okay. So let's see if I have any... I do have some topics.
Oh, one thing we forgot to talk about last week is I sent you that picture of Allison.
Yes. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
The picture's better than the story.
Oh, so it's a picture of Allison wearing a really, really cheap Groucho Marx mask. I mean, like, not even...
It had a mustache.
It had a mustache.
Well, the mustache fell off.
It was super plasticky. But and she's also, like, inquisitively staring at some pages of the Bible. I did notice it was in the New Testament. Probably Acts or something. Probably something dumb.
It almost looks like it was set up, doesn't it? It looks like something I would set up, right?
You know,
put on the Groucho. But no, that was... So, when she's wearing those glasses, she's playing a character called Mr. Smarty Pants.
Mm-hmm.
She came up with it all by herself. That's Mr. Smarty Pants.
Well, I don't think she came up with it all by herself.
I didn't give it to her.
That doesn't mean she gave it all by herself.
Okay. Well,
she got it from television or from her friends or something.
Okay. Well, she created the character. And
not that I don't think Allison is creative. It just doesn't sound like that.
But I liked the picture because, yes, you know, it's kind of this... kind of how, you know, it's that whole, I don't know how I want to say it, but, you know, it looks like something, it looks like something I would stage, right? Where, like, okay, let's put on these silly glasses and have you read something that most people...
It did look like something, yeah.
And then let's have you read something that most people think is really, really serious, right? She likes the Bible because there's a map in it.
Oh, well, she should read Game of Thrones, then.
I should get her a book of maps.
You should.
Actually, that's a really good idea. I think I'm going to get her a book of maps.
Good thinking. Get ones that are both real and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Then it may, you know.
I always loved the books that had maps on the front and back cover. You know, like in the inside binding stuff there.
I like them because they... I know what you mean. I think we're on the same page. The reason why you like them is because they... It's not a picture book, but it gives you an idea of the setting that they're in, and so you can kind of figure out where things are in relation to one another.
Right.
Just adds a certain bit of verisimilitude that helps you get into the story.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I know I had a couple books as a kid, and they were probably still even picture books at the time, but, you know, there was a map on the inside cover, and I don't know, I just really liked the book, mostly because of the map. I wish I could remember which one that was.
This is not me. Hold on a second. Log out of Twitter. I was just checking to see if there's some interesting tweets that I had. Because I think there were.
Okay.
But I want to make sure. All right. Because we could talk about the whole... All the world troubles, and more importantly, the InfoWars stuff that's coming up.
The InfoWars one. You should recap that briefly. That was pretty...
So I went to InfoWars just for, like, I wonder... how crazy could they possibly be getting about the plane?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty crazy! The original article that I read was, like, the day of, or just after... And it was somebody saying that this looks like a false flag attack.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably all we know. I forget exactly what it said, but it seems like this.
They said it went on and on about this, how they took MH370 and screwed the parts across Ukraine.
Because there were reports of bodies being pre-burnt, and the other stuff was not burned, and so that seems to, you know, that means it was probably MH370 that was then filled with dead bodies. It was taken, filled with dead bodies, and then made to this to make Russia look bad. And then the very end, it said, all we know now, you know, but we can't be sure, all we know now is that there's a plane down. It's like that, you're kind of burying the lead a bit with that.
You haven't really tweeted much since our last show. You would talk about your Yo app a little bit.
Right.
You responded to Barlow.
No, I didn't tweet much since, I mean, 2 days ago. I don't tweet all that much.
Well, okay, so you're talking about older things, I guess?
Yeah.
Seems like we just had this conversation.
But there were some other things that I thought I saw, and I was like, did I cover that? Maybe it was in messages. Maybe it was actually in just messages to you. Let's see.
I don't know. I don't know. I've been busy working in Amazon EC2, setting up a network there.
There's the picture of the giant beetle. The stag beetle.
Oh, okay. The one I sent a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't talk about that at all. But there's a, it's a really big, I mean, it, like, it looks like this is something tropical or something. Because, it, you know, it's a big beetle, about a quarter the size of your hand or something.
I mean, yeah, it was this big.
Okay, so.
It was about a little over 2 inches, 2 1/4 inches or so.
It's a big beetle.
It is a big beetle. And it was on the way into work. And I told Greg, I'm like, I thought it was invasive. I thought I thought it hitched a ride from Asia or something like that. But turns out stag beetles are deciduous temperate beetles.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually coming down from the north, not across the ocean from faraway scary lands. Damn Canadians.
Who knew? Yeah, they're like Terrence and Phillip there. They're trying to get in on our stuff.
Yep.
Okay, so let me go into something that I've kind of brought up before, but I still think it's interesting to think of this, to think of things in this way. I look at you talked about the entropy thing before. It appears that the universe has sort of like, it's moving through a sieve almost. It's moving through this strain. This strainer, and the only thing that's getting through this strainer is pockets of energy. The stuff that's getting left behind is where there's very little energy, or it's complete disorder, and that turns into kind of, it just gets slower and slower and slower, and eventually gets no time. It's trying to figure out how to phrase this correctly, so it may sound a little bit weird, but what we're seeing is really kind of a selection process on the universe because of this sieve. So what's lasting are these bits of energy that either have a lot of energy in them, like stars, and they are throwing out energy as they're doing it, creating disorder inside them that eventually will cause things to happen, or things like life or other processes that take energy from around them and create disorder. That's what gets through time. That's what gets through to the future, is large amalgamations of energy that are taking up more energy to keep going. If you expand that process out, you can see how life gets through, large conglomerations of large life gets through, and things on the outside don't. You can see how cities are large conglomerations of energy, and stuff on the outside, if it doesn't have energy, dies. You can see how economics works in that sense. Things get pumped up with energy, and if they don't continue to get energy, they'll die, but they suck up energy in order to do that, and they also radiate out stuff. So this can be applied on all levels as something going, as the way in which to get from the past to the future is to latch on to something with a lot of energy. If you take a look at this and you extrapolate that out into human behavior, it doesn't surprise you that people would come across this kind of idea and put their beliefs behind it, whether it be religion or political. You look at like a Randians, libertarians, they say, well, you know, it's accumulation of wealth that's what you need to do. Or you look at, for example, you know, Christianity is a great example. If you accumulate onto this idea will continue to go. And it's really not you that's living. It's that idea that's continuing. It's that construct is continuing, mm-hmm, through the energy of that you're putting into it. It's, and the promise they say is that you'll continue, but that bit of energy that you put into it is just letting it go, letting it keep going. It's not necessarily you that's going with it. It's you're putting energy into something else. It's the energy is lying to us. The energy is what's taking it.
Okay. It's interesting. I think you should spend some more time and try to formulate that a little bit better. But I get what you're saying. You know, when you're at the beginning, I think needs the most work, right?
Right. I don't know how to express it.
You didn't really tie the sieve part in really well. But when you started talking about
systems,
right, and then like how it even shows with economic and cities and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it started to take form. So that was a good part of it. Like cities, it was like starting. Like there was a couple sparks there. Like okay, and when you went to economics, like that's when it like the tinder caught, right?
Yeah.
So that was a good part of that. So work on that. Develop it a little bit more and see what you come up with.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how to say it in the best way. Right now, mm-hmm. it's a nascent argument that I think has merit to it, but I don't know how to express it best. But I think there's something to that. It got me also thinking about how there's two kind of systems. Well, it got me thinking about economics because a lot of the problems that we're having now are people aren't. I think, at least based on the impression that I get, is that there's a whole part of society now that wants to, say, get rid of taxes that will help the situation. And there's another part of the economic people saying, no, you just got to spend more, that will help. We see directly, I think, that if you don't spend, so Kansas is a great example of a place that cut taxes because they have a bunch of Republicans in there. They cut taxes big time. Guess what? Their economy sucks. Their economy is doing terrible. Well, guess is a place where the economy is actually doing a lot better than it was only a couple years ago. California, they have plenty of high taxes. Mm-hmm. You pump money into the system,
right.
And it turns out that actually works. It doesn't hurt people's jobs. When there's more money in the system, there's more money for everybody, not just for the evil people who are going to be trying to take it, whatever that may be. But also got me thinking about the two major schools of economics. There's essentially the Austrian school and the Keynesian school, and they're talking about what to do in boom and bust economies. And the Keynesian school basically says you have these booms and busts and you want to try to keep putting money in when there's a bust and then remove money when there's a boom. Mm-hmm. And the Austrian school is more like, well, what you want to do is try to make it so so it's all kind of level and there's no booms or busts. And there's merit in both. I think that you can look at a classic economic bubble situation, sort of like a balloon attached to like an air source of some sort. Now, if you just don't pump anything into it, then it's not going to inflate at all.
Right.
You can inflate it a bit. But eventually, because it's a porous thing, it's not an absolutely rigid structure, it will start to lose some of its air. So if you keep some air, some energy being put into it, in this case air, at just the right level, so things are going to escape, but you keep putting energy into it, it will stay pretty much the same. As long as you ignore the other environment, the environment that's happening around it, which is also a major selective pressure. I mean, if everything gets cold, then you have to pump up. You have to change what you're doing. So you have to keep your hand on that based on the environmental.
Well, it's kind of like regulating the tax rate, right?
Right. But if you just put energy into it, it'll explode. And that's what we see when we see major bubbles, like the housing bubble. It's just lots of energy is being put into something that can't hold the stress. Boom. It blows up.
That might be a little bit weaker part of this argument, right? Because it's
the housing bubble. The reason why it broke was because it was not nearly as solid as people said it was, and eventually the holes in the balloon, in this metaphor it's a balloon, the holes in the structure that was being inflated were too large, and they caused the whole thing to fail, but catastrophically.
Right, but there's a situation where there could be the demand to support, you know, hypergrowth and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When it's an uninflated balloon, hypergrowth is good. You want to get that inflated. Right. When it's already inflated, the maximum it can go, you don't know that because you don't know what material it's made out of.
Right. I mean,
you don't know what stresses it can take.
It's not just the maximum. You know, it's not a finite balloon. It can grow over time. It can contract over time. The maximum size is variable depending on other things.
Right, depending on the environment. Yeah. Right. If the pressure drops outside, then it could probably handle more. So you have to be cognizant of the environment while you're doing that. But if you just turn the accelerator on and just pump it up, not cognizant of either what it's made of or what the exterior environment is, it's going to burst.
Right. Drink some beer.
That Jeff said always that I say, shut the fuck up.
Speaking for the audience. Good point. I think you're just dragging it on a little bit too long.
I want to find out if it's good or not.
Well, you need to debate an economist.
Well, an economist would school me. Because the point is, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. I have an idea.
Right. Well, debate an armchair economist on Reddit.
Maybe I will. It's not really debate. It's more of me like, does this make any sense?